So happy to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Today, we zero in on fruits. I mentioned fruit trees, but we can talk about other things relating and other kinds of fruit, lower growing fruits as well, I think, with our three guests. No, I'm sure of it. Daryl Roper, UW-Madison horticulturist, also with Extension, Dan Maher, UW-Madison entomologist, and Patty McManus, UW-Madison plant pathologist. The three of them have been with us before, and they're back again. Fruit crop specialists in their respective departments, and so we can cover the insects and the diseases and the and all of the arboriculture. Is that right? Is that correct? Is that right? Connected with trees? I suppose. All right. Well, come a little closer. I'll lean into the microphones, you all, and we'll get going. Thanks a lot for being with us, by the way. Patty, great to have you back.
Thanks.
Dan, nice to have you back.
Great to be here.
And Terrell, it's been, what, a month or a couple months, I think?
It's been more than that. It's been a while.
Well, it's nice to have you with us. Certainly, if you have some... By the way, what can we talk about today and what will you probably not talk about today? Patty, what about you?
Well, any fruits. We hope temperate fruits rather than citrus and tropical fruits. But we'd like to, you know, apples, cherries, peaches, plums, strawberries, raspberries, grapes.
Did she miss anything, Dan?
I think she did pretty good there. We're not going to talk about carpenter ants today. That's Phil's responsibility.
Okay, so we'll skip on those. And I think we're in pretty good shape now. And we've got lots of people online already with lots of questions. So let's go to Liz in Rochester, Minnesota. Liz, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question is, we have cherry trees, those little sour cherry trees. And we've planted them, but they keep dying. The first time we planted them, they grew for like 7 years, and they got pretty big. But then they die, and now they just keep dying. They won't grow anymore. Is there something wrong with, like, the soil? Did they, like, use up all the stuff in it, or?
Oh, well, what do you think, Terrell?
I don't think it's a matter of the soil, except unless it's too wet. That would be a common problem with cherry trees. If their roots are wet, if your soil is heavy or in a low spot, that would
we
certainly...
have, like, clay soil. Would
right.
that be too
that,
wet?
That would be the problem.
Oh.
And then if... I don't know where they are in relation to your downspouts or waterways or other places where water might collect.
Okay.
So maybe you just need to try one in a different site in your garden.
Okay.
Give that a shot. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Janice in Marshfield, hello to you.
Hello. I have a question about an Italian prune tree that we have. When we first put it in, I thought it was a dwarf. I'm not sure that it is. It's grown very hardily in the spot that it is. And I guess two questions. Is it okay to trim that to kind of shape it in its spot? Will that hurt the tree?
Sounds like another Terrell question. Terrell Roper?
Oh, it won't hurt to prune that tree at all. The best time to prune those is in the dormant season. But, I read in the nursery catalogs as well about dwarf plums and dwarf peaches and dwarf this and that, and really the only reliable dwarfing rootstocks we have are for apples, although there are some newer ones for cherries. And the nurseries make the claim because a plum tree won't get as large as a full-sized apple tree, for example, and so all of a sudden it's a dwarf.
Oh, because it's big. The other question is that the tree set on a lot of plums or prunes or whatever you want to call them this spring, and now they're dropping. And last year the same thing happened, and I thought maybe it was because it was so dry, but we've gotten fairly good moisture. Is that just the way those trees are, or is there a reason why they're dropping?
Let me ask, at the end of the year last year at harvest time, last year, did you have a fair crop of plums?
I had one.
Oh, okay. So it dropped them all.
Yeah, this year it looks better. It was newer, though. That was the first year it had blossomed.
Okay. And it does take those trees a little while to really be able to support a crop of fruit.
Okay.
But yes, plums do drop, and it's a pollination issue, usually. And they're self-fruitful, so you don't need two trees.
Yeah, I just have one.
It's a matter of the tree being able to carry those on to maturity. And even when the tree is full size, you'll see a fair amount of drop about this time of year, even a little earlier, as the plums that weren't pollinated completely will drop.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, it looks like more are set on, and I actually have a lot more optimism for getting some off of it this year. So good.
Well, good. Good for you. Dan, or do bees do all of the pollinating on that?
Yes, most all of our tree fruits are insect pollinated, so mm-hmm. bees are very important. And if you have bad weather, rainy weather, windy weather, cold weather during the flowering period, then the pollinators aren't going to be quite as active, and you may have not quite as heavy of a fruit crop.
Okay. And Patty, would any kind of diseases cause a drop, or would they?
Well, in a tree that's several years old, which is not the case in this instance, but just about any kind of tree as it gets very old might acquire viruses that make it less productive.
Yeah.
But then you would also expect to see reduced bloom. So not really fruit drop, but just reduced productivity altogether.
Okay. Roman in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Roman.
Hi, good morning. I would like to share with all your listeners an approach to getting rid of the problem of worms in your apples. I planted two Fireside Delicious trees about 8 years ago, and it was the third year I began to get these white moth-like critters that fly around and lay their eggs, and next thing you know, you've got worms in all your apples. And I fought it without any poisons or anything by fighting it. I didn't know just what to do, but a couple years ago, somebody suggested this. Now, everybody listen carefully, because you take a gallon, either a milk jug or a soap jug from liquid soap or a water jug, whatever, cut about a 4-inch door in the top, leave a flap to keep the rain from coming in. You put a cup of sugar, a cup of vinegar, a banana peel, and about two, maybe a couple quarts of water. And that ferments into a nice odoriferous solution that attracts these butterfly-like things, and they go in there and drown, and you just get like a mush of them. After a while, you have to change it two or three times in the season. And it seemed to work just beautifully for me last year. I tried poisons 1 year against my better judgment, and that I couldn't keep up with it. That didn't work. But this really did the job, and I think I've got the same problem that the last caller. The apples I'm getting this year, and I had a million blossoms, are weaseny, and they're dropping, and I haven't seen many bees. I hate to say I did catch a few bees in this solution in the past, which I hate to see happen, because I've got a friend that's 100 years old. I asked him one day, and he's as healthy as a 50-year-old, and he told me one of his secrets is he eats a lot of honey, and I've been eating a quart of honey or better every month since, and all that I eat. But at any rate, that's my contribution for the day.
So we got banana peel, vinegar, sugar, and water.
That's correct, yeah.
All right. Well, Dan Marr, what do you think about that?
That's a very common home remedy. It's primarily being used for coddling moth control. The idea is to attract the moths, the adult moths, into something and kill them so that they don't have a chance to lay their eggs. It works well for some people, and for other people it doesn't work at all. So I guess if you're interested, you know, you can certainly give it a try. What he indicated as a problem in it, it will attract a lot of things. A lot of different insects are attracted to sweet odors, the odor of fermentation. One of the problems that we see associated with it occasionally is that picnic beetles and sap beetles are kind of attracted to the same solution. So if there are other softer fruits in the area, then you could actually be attracting some insects into the area that you don't want. But yes, a lot of people use that and have fairly good results with it.
And I thank you very much for calling, Roman. I don't want to spend our time talking about the whole honeybee situation, but it is kind of gotten a critical situation, or getting to be a serious situation, of the loss of a lot of our honeybees.
Well, that's true. And we were just at apple growers field day earlier this week, and we had a commercial beekeeper there. He really indicated that the problem is not as bad in Wisconsin for many of the beekeepers as it is in other parts of the country, but it's a multiplier effect if if the California growers can't find pollinators close by, bees, commercial beehives for their crops, then they're looking all over the country for hives, and then that has certainly an impact on people trying to pollinate their crops here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Thanks again, Roman. Laura in Blue River will turn to you next. Hi, Laura.
Good morning. I've gotten myself into a really bad cycle with my apple trees by initially pruning too hard. I've got about 4 or 5 apple trees, mostly dwarf. They're between 5 and 10 years old. One of them was broken in half by a falling tree, but the other, I just initially pruned them too hard, and they're like, they look like boxwood shrubs. They are so thick with growth. And the last couple of years, I've tried pulling out the sprouts in midsummer, but I can't seem to break this cycle.
Well, Tara, what do you think?
That's a really difficult problem.
Yeah.
That's what I tell people when they have an old tree and they would like to renovate it, mm-hmm. is the more you cut, the more they grow.
Yeah.
Now, on those young succulent shoots, one way to reduce the amount of growth is to not cut those off, but put on a pair of gloves and tear them off.
That's what I've been doing. I've been tearing them out in the middle of the summer, hoping to slow down the growth, but hasn't really done anything.
Yeah.
I've done that the last 2 years.
How did you prune initially? Did you take out whole limbs, or did you try to sort of sculpt?
Well, yeah, both, I guess.
Oh, you did
both. I just pruned them initially too hard, and that was a mistake. And I'm thinking, should I even just dig them out and start over, because I've gotten into an irrevocable cycle here?
Well, a couple of ideas. We do have a bulletin on training and pruning apple trees that might give you some ideas for how to approach that. And I'm also kind of getting the sense that you've been making a number of cuts around the outside of the canopy. And the better approach is to make fewer cuts on the inside of the canopy. So you want to remove limbs in their entirety as opposed to tipping them.
And yes. Yeah, I've learned that now. Maybe too late.
The other thing that will reduce the amount of growth on the limbs that remain is if you can bend them towards horizontal.
Right.
So apple limbs that are growing straight up tend to be very vigorous, very vegetative. But if you can bend them over, say, 45 to 60 degrees from vertical, that also reduces the amount of vegetative growth that they'll put out.
Right. Okay. So you wouldn't suggest taking out the trees because it's just going nowhere then, or
well, you may want to be working towards that direction, but no, I'm not a real advocate of just yanking them all out at once, but maybe plant one this year and slowly exchange those over time.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests, Terrell Roper, Dan Maher, and Patty McManus from the University of Wisconsin. Jim Packard, our producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking fruits on this edition of Garden Talk with our three guests, and we can deal with strawberries, or we can deal with plums, or pears, or peaches, pretty much whatever, apples, whatever you want to talk about, cherries. And we can deal with them from a lot of different perspectives, from just taking care of those trees all the way to diseases that might be, plants and other trees as well, diseases that might attack them or insects that might attack them as well with our three guests. So feel free to join in with your disease or insect or care question relating to your fruit plants. And let's go back to the phones. Nellie in Rusk County, you are next. Hi, Nellie.
Hi, Larry. Back to apple trees. I've got a Whitney crab that I planted about 20 years ago, and it is always just loaded with apples, which I don't spray, and they just fall, and the deer and the varmints eat them. But it had grown into a three-liter tree, and during one of our windstorms about a month ago, the second strongest trunk was split off completely and peeled off that area right down to the heartwood. I'm wondering if that tree is doomed, if I should paint that wound, or what should I do? The tree is beautiful in the spring. That's the main reason I like it.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I assume that you removed the leader that was broken and that got cut out.
Yes, that was cut up, sawed up, and stored for firewood already.
Okay. I wouldn't do anything to that. Now, will it affect the longevity of the tree? It might. But covering over that wound with any sort of paint or tar or anything like that would just create an environment underneath it where critters can live. So just let that dry out, and slowly over time the tree will callus over that wound, and and it should recover.
On that, the third trunk is rather spindly, and the main branch, which is not very sturdy, it loaded with green apples, and it is bent over almost within 2 feet of the ground. Do you think I should cut that third trunk out?
You could, or the other thing you could do is to remove some of the fruit on that limb to give it some relief.
Yeah. It was growing at a weird angle, and it's kind of strange looking now, but I'm fond of the tree, so I think I'll...
Hang on to it.
Yeah.
Hang on to it, Nellie.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Betty in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Thank you for helping me.
Sure.
I have a grape arbor that is really producing grapes and foliage. The vines are too extensive. They're making a huge canopy. I was wondering if you would recommend me trimming the vines.
You got a great publication on that one.
Yeah. We do have a publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, and it should be available from your local county extension office, and it's also available online at learningstore.uwex.edu.
But I wonder about trimming them this time of the year.
I think you could get away with pruning that, but let me talk a little bit about pruning them in the dormant season, and then we'll get to your question about pruning them today. The mistake that most grape growers or gardeners make in pruning grapevines is they don't prune heavily enough, and they leave way too much vine, and so you just end up with this gargantuan plant. And you need to leave, for a mature grapevine, somewhere around 50 to 60 buds when you're all done pruning, which isn't very many. Now, could you prune that this time of year? Sure. I don't think that you would suffer any adverse responses from that. Maybe Patty would want to comment about if we'd set anything up for diseases. If you do prune this time of year, you may get a little bit of bleeding out of the cut ends, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Patty, what do you think?
Yeah, from a disease standpoint, I don't see a problem with it. Whenever you're pruning, whether it's grapes or anything else, though, if you can do it a few days in advance of a rain, well, if there's rain forecast, don't prune. Do it during a dry period. So try to avoid pruning just before rain, because if there are fungal spores in the area, then that rain, that wetness will promote their germination and you'll get infection. So aim for a dry spell.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for helping me.
Yeah, thanks, Betty. And Bruce in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah. I've got a couple apple trees that didn't get sprayed yet this year, and I'm wondering if the apples are trash now. Or would it still help to spray?
Okay, and you're spraying for Dan, you want to take, or who's
insect,
the best?
Insects,
okay, Dan.
Bugs in the apples, you know, worms.
Okay.
Well, there's a whole bunch of different bugs that can get into apples, and it just depends upon which is the culprit, your main culprit, as to whether it's too late or not. Actually, probably not. One insect that is notorious is called coddling moth, and the activity of that insect is very diagnostic. It feeds in the core area. Usually there's a tunnel to the outside somewhere. But it doesn't just tunnel throughout the entire fruit. It feeds mostly in the area of the core.
There will be tunnels coming out, right?
There will be usually one tunnel, one very noticeable tunnel to the outside. That's an insect that has two generations per year. We're kind of at the beginning of the first generation right now. And so it may be a little bit too late to protect for that. There is a summer generation as well, and if you end up with, obvious coddling moth from this first generation, the fruit that are left that are still good can be protected later on from that second generation. A bigger problem for many homeowners is an insect that we call apple maggot or railroad worm, sometimes called. And that's an insect that tunnels throughout the entire fruit and causes initially some very kind of light brown trailing through the fruit. And eventually the fruit will decompose and fall off the tree, and you end up with just a really mushy-looking fruit with some about quarter-inch white maggots in it. That's a really, really common problem as well. And no, you're not too late to protect from that. That's a summer insect problem. Usually it gets started about the first week in July, so we're getting kind of pretty close to that period of time. And if that's a significant problem for you, you still have plenty of time. The problem with that insect is that it's going to fly for the rest of the summer. We can have continued emergence of apple maggots. They're spending the time in the ground right now. That's where they overwinter. That's where they spend the springtime. But they can fly pretty much throughout the summertime right up until harvest, especially of the earlier varieties or the mid-season varieties on apples. So oftentimes a question I get is, you know, we religiously sprayed our apple trees through May and June and July,
right,
and we got wormy fruit, and that's because they went on vacation for 2 weeks in August, and that's when the insects hit.
Yep.
So it's kind of a good news, bad news situation.
Okay, now my spraying regimen then would be, what, every 10 days, every week, what?
No more often than every 10 days.
Okay.
10 days to 2 weeks would be normal. There is a very serious disease problem on apples that that Patty should address as well.
Patty, what's that?
Well, apple scab is far and away the most common disease of apple and crab apple. And so many varieties, although it's been relatively dry in southern Wisconsin and even drier in northern Wisconsin, many varieties are showing apple scab now. And the early symptoms and the way they're looking now still is that they're sort of a soft brown spot with has sort of a fuzzy look to it. But within a couple of weeks, we'll be seeing them getting more dry and crusty, and that's where the name scab comes from. But as long as the lesions still have a fuzzy look to them, it means that they have spores on them, and those can infect fruit still. And so if you see that sort of thing on your leaves, you might consider using a spray for diseases. And most garden stores have Captan or Mancozeb. Those would be two very effective fungicides that you might try.
Aren't there combinations for insects and the scab and so forth?
Yes, and those combination sprays will do generally a good job for both the diseases and the insect problems.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Art in Danbury, it's your turn next. Hi, Art.
Hello. I planted an apple tree earlier this year. We have very sandy soil, so I dug a good-sized hole, put in some heavier soil, planted it, watered it real well, and then kept it watered quite heavily for the next 3-4 weeks. But the leaves, as they developed, would lift up, almost kind of curl up inside on themselves. And I assumed that I originally had a pest, so I sprayed with 7 a couple of times, but it didn't seem to help the problem. Now, I may have guessed the problem, and I quit watering it about 2 weeks ago, and it seems to be improving. And I'm curious if perhaps I was, even though we have very sandy soil, if I was overwatering the tree.
Wow. Well, Terrell, let's go to you first.
Yeah, the other, Patty just wrote me a note questioning about wind, and I think that's something to consider because the wind can be desiccating. Did you put any mulch around the base of the tree when you planted it?
Yes, I did.
I don't think it's a watering problem. I don't think the water is going away too quickly.
Or that he's overwatering?
Yeah. Watering once to twice a week is sufficient for trees, even when they're just newly planted. And Dan and I were exchanging glances, and there are a couple of possibilities for insect pests that might cause the leaves to curl as well.
Yeah, Dan, what do you think?
Well, aphids are a possibility. You mentioned that you were concerned about them, but if there are enough aphids on the leaves to actually result in curling, you should be able to see them. They're fairly small. They're only about a 16th of an inch, but they occur in fairly large numbers, and usually it takes 10, 15 or so on a leaf or even more before you start seeing curling activity. But they're very noticeable, even though they are small. So the fact that you didn't see any is a bit of a puzzle as well. The other thing about aphids is that they are sometimes rather temporary. We have a lot of other critters that just love to eat aphids. And so you can see old damage but no insects remaining because things like lady beetles and things like that have come and fed on them.
I toss another thing in there. I have four mature apple trees, which are right next to it. They're Honeycrisp, and I planted this one. It's a sweet 16, so that they'd be able to better pollinate. The other apple trees, as I said, are mature, and they show no leaf curling at all. And I haven't seen any aphids, so that doesn't seem likely.
No, doesn't. Doesn't really seem likely. That's a little bit of a puzzle.
is there any white growth or a whitish cast to the leaves?
Not that I've noticed, no.
Okay. I was going to suggest powdery mildew. That would be that cups leaves curls them a bit, but you would be seeing a white powdery fungal growth if that were the case. So,
particularly on the underside.
Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're at a bit of a loss on that one, unfortunately, and could have been the wind, as Patty was suggesting. It might have been some combination of, and it was just planted, right?
Yeah, it was planted in May.
Yeah.
So I say, after I quit watering it a couple of weeks ago, and the ground seems to be drying out somewhat. The new leaves do seem to be much better and don't seem to be curling so much. So whatever it is, may have corrected itself,
Yeah, but, you know, it could have been some shock just from the planting and a combination. And I suppose it could have been getting too much water.
It could have, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Art. Thanks for calling. Norm in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Norman.
Hey. I have two questions for your distinguished guest. One is, we have some peach trees, and we're right at the northern edge of Zone 4A, but we're in kind of a protected area in woods and above the Wisconsin River, so we do have a little help there. But I've been burying those peach trees for 3 years now, and they've got a lot of peaches on this year, small ones. But I'm getting kind of tired of doing it because it takes about 4 hours to bury one of those each year, and then about the same or a couple hours to get them back out in the spring. Do they have any suggestions for how one could winter those through in this climate?
Well, my best suggestion for overwintering peach trees is to do it south of I-70.
South of I-70. But given that, let's see, can we build a greenhouse around them? What do you do there, Terrell?
Let me just tell you what other people have done with peaches. One is to plant them in large pots, like those half barrels that are available, and put them in a modestly heated shed over the winter, something that'll just keep it from getting well below freezing. Laying them down is the other suggestion. And up where you are, peaches are just not in the cards. I tease the county agents. There's one bulletin I'm never going to have to write. It's pruning mature peach trees. They just don't last that long. I would say the average age for a peach tree in Wisconsin is about 10 years before winter finally does them in. You could try putting a tarp over the tree, and when it got really cold, adding some extra heat, like a 100-watt light bulb inside, that might provide sufficient protection. But up where you are, it's
pretty
just plain
tough.
Cold.
Pretty tough.
That's why they grow cranberries up there.
Okay.
The next question, quick, is on grapevines. Do you advocate trimming the new shoots because they get quite long and they tend to shade the grapes quite a bit too, and they get kind of out of hand? You know, they grow like crazy. Would you be better off pruning those back a little bit, or should you leave all the new shoots grow as long as they want to grow, even if it's 10, 15 feet?
It's a really common practice in commercial vineyards to tip those shoots up to about a foot above the ground level. So as those drape off of the grapevine and get on the ground, you could cut them back to about a foot above the soil line. And that's fine. They have sufficient strength to still mature their fruit crop that way. But in terms of thinning out the canopy up where the grapes are, there's really very little reason to do that.
Okay. Doesn't help with the sugar content or anything if the sunlight gets on them.
No, because the sugar comes from the leaves, not from the light striking the individual berries.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Patty, what kinds of disease issues are we seeing in our fruits this year or have come across your desk?
Well, fire blight is starting to show up on apple and pear, and that's a pretty common disease of apple and pear. Fortunately for homeowners, it usually doesn't get too far out of control because there's just one or a few trees, and they're usually not over-fertilized too much. For commercial growers, that's more of a problem, but... So that's starting to show up. And, of course, apple scab I've
apple
already
scab,
mentioned.
Apple scab, yep. Bill in Dubuque, Iowa. It's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I tuned in late. I hope you didn't cover this because it's also a peach problem. The peaches I have are bleeding or seepage is coming out of the fruit itself. It looks like clear, jellied sugar syrup or something. There must be an insect going in there. Is that? Can you tell me anything about that from the little description I gave you?
Dan Marr, what do you think?
So this is just a couple of droplets coming out of each spot.
Yeah, and it runs down the side and hardens.
Yeah. It's more than likely it's an insect called Plum curculio. It's a type of a weevil or a type of a beetle. Very common insect. It attacks. All of our stone fruits. It's a native insect that primarily feeds on native plums, but it will attack cherries, apricots, and as well as apples and other tree fruits.
How do you spell it?
It's plum, as in the
plum.
The plum tree,
yeah.
And curculio, curculio.
Okay, and the other question I had is... when is the best time? I severely pruned my peach trees a couple of years ago, and I didn't get any fruit the next year. So when's the best time to give them a relatively severe pruning without ruining next year's crop?
Well, it's the timing isn't the critical issue. It's what you cut off. Peaches, like other tree fruits, are best pruned during the dormant season, but peaches bear fruit on one-year-old wood, and so if you cut off most of the one-year-old wood, then you cut off all your flower buds for the next year. So in pruning peach trees, like other trees, it's a matter of making those thinning cuts, removing entire branches rather than just cutting the tips off all of the branches.
Okay. Before I heard you say not to spray more than every 10 days, what if it rains right after you spray? Do you spray again soon or does it hang on?
Most of our modern sprays have, in the mixture, have materials that enable them to adhere to the foliage and withstand moderate weathering. If you have a fairly good rain before the material has a chance to dry off, that is within a few hours after spraying, then you probably have lost the material. But as long as the material has dried off pretty well, a light to moderate rain should not affect the longevity of it. If you get into a period of, several consecutive days of fairly significant rains, then you probably are losing a fair amount of material, and you might want to shorten up that spray interval.
Okay.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Wayne in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About 2 years ago, I had an old crabapple tree cut down and the stump removed. But now there are little sprouts coming up all over the yard where those roots were. And I've tried to cut those out, but they keep springing up. I'm wondering, is there any way I can kill those sprouts so they won't keep coming out?
Probably the best solution to that is to wipe them with Roundup. Not spray them, but wipe them. So put on a pair of rubber gloves and then a pair of cotton gloves over that and mix up Roundup about a 5% solution and carefully wipe the foliage, and that will be carried down into the old roots and will eventually kill them. Now, it's uncommon for that to occur in lawns because that consistent just mowing every week eventually wears them out. But if that's not the case, then wiping them with Roundup should solve the problem.
Well, and mowing them just seems to cut them off and allow more leaves or more limbs or sprouts to grow out of them.
Yeah, that will happen in the short run, but eventually they'll run out of sugar below ground and die.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, appreciate your call. And Harry in Lamira, we go to you next. Hi, Harry.
Hi. I have a question about a peach tree. The leaves are falling off of it, and what's happening is they're bubbling up. They're curling up, and they like have air bubbles in them, and the edges of the leaves are turning red, and I'm losing all of them.
You have peach leaf curl, and that's one of our more common diseases of peach. Too late this year to do anything about it. The fungus infects the leaves just as they're opening, and the fungus actually overwinters inside the bud scales. And so the way to deal with this problem is to spray a fungicide either in the fall after all the leaves have fallen off, or maybe even more effectively in the spring before the leaves emerge. So it really has to be early. You want it to be, when the tree's about ready to break dormancy, so the buds are starting to plump up a little bit, but before the leaves actually emerge. And there's a number of effective compounds that work on that. It's the fungus is pretty easy to get at.
Okay, thanks. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're dealing with all things relating to fruits today, fruit trees and fruits like strawberries and all kinds of things with our three guests. And we're dealing with them from a cultural standpoint, from pruning and that sort of thing, to the insects and to the diseases that can affect those plants. And so we hope you'll join in. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Our guests, Terrell Roper, Dan Marr, and Patty McManus, all from the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have our fruit team with us today. Terrell Roper, horticulturist, Dan Marr, entomologist, Patty McManus, plant pathologist, all with the University of Wisconsin-Madison and with Extension as well, some of them. And glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Before we go back to the phones, you have a new publication, Terrell, that you wanted to mention.
We do. After an extensive period of writing and rewriting and editing and fiddling around, we have a publication, a completely revised publication called Apple Pest Management for Home Gardeners. Again, it's available online or through your local county extension office. And we think that it will answer a lot of questions that homeowners have about controlling pests in apple trees at home.
Very good. And that, what's the title of that again?
Apple Pest Management for Home Gardeners. The number is A2179.
2179. Okay, let's go to Ron in Madison. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. I'm concerned about future fruit production in both northern and southern Wisconsin. If there are no honeybees, say from 2 to 10 years from now, if they just disappear, are there any fruits, whether they're tree fruits or small annual fruits, that we'll be able to grow? And the long-term question is, say, 15 to 50 years from now, if we inherit the climate of Arkansas with more summer droughts, more spring and fall flooding, and heavier ice storms like they had in the Ozarks in January, are there tree fruits or grapes or pecans or something that will survive that will be food we can grow here locally?
Hmm. Broad questions there, big questions. Dan Marr, let's turn to you on the bee issue first.
Well, hopefully, Ron, we'll never experience that. There's still a lot of questions as to what's going on with the bee decline, the colony decline that we're seeing across the country. there's probably a bit of a shortage of pollinators currently, but I suspect it's something that will be solvable. The honeybee has been around for a long, long time and has experienced a lot of changes in its environment over those periods of time. It's not even native to North America. It was one of the things that was introduced here by early colonists. So hopefully that won't be a problem from the perspective of pollinators. In addition, we have an awful lot of wild native pollinator bees, about bumblebees, mason bees, leafcutter bees, just a whole bunch of different things that do pollinate fruit crops. So from a pollinator perspective, hopefully we won't be in any problem.
And then, Tara, I'll just turn to you a bit on the sort of the climate question there.
Well, if we do inherit Arkansas's climate, they grow both apples and peaches and other tree fruits in Arkansas, and they're pretty happy there. They mature a lot earlier in the year there because they start a lot earlier. So I'm not that pessimistic about the future of fruit production in a place like Wisconsin. The one fruit crop that we grow that would be really affected by that sort of climate change would be cranberries, because we do need the cold weather to protect those through the winter.
Okay. So cranberries would probably take a hit, but the rest probably not.
I think we'd be okay.
Thanks again, Ron. Treva in Ottawa, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Nanking cherry bush that I planted in 2001. The bush is beautiful. It flowers every year, but I never get any cherries. So I called the people I bought it from to ask them what might be wrong or if it needed a mate. And they said, I might not have enough bees. Well, I have plenty of bees. And they said, no, this bush doesn't need a mate, but yours might. So I didn't think that was a very helpful answer.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very helpful, does
no,
it, Tara?
It doesn't. No. I'm trying you.
Well, I'm already scratching my head because the Nanking cherries, to my understanding, are self-fruitful. And,
well,
and you get lots of flowers, but no fruit?
No, never a cherry.
Lots of flowers.
Sometimes nurseries get confused when they ship out their orders.
Okay. And it might be something else?
That's certainly a possibility.
Well, never having met a Nanking cherry before, I wouldn't know. Got it mostly for the birds.
I tell you what, if you type in Nanking cherry in a search engine, you're probably going to get a pretty good picture of
pictures.
What one looks like, and especially the leaves and the bark.
Okay, so if I do have a Nanking cherry, getting another one probably won't help then.
Probably not.
Okay.
Other than the
poor thing's sterile.
Other than if you replaced it, you might get one that would produce cherries.
Yeah, there's always that.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It does. Enjoy the flowers.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Driva. Denise in Madison, hi to you.
I'm good, thanks. I'm calling about raspberries. We have raspberry bushes in our garden that we've noticed. It's kind of a shame because it's a really lovely insect. It's sort of an iridescent green, blue-green winged beetle that's doing a pretty fair job on the foliage on the raspberry bushes. And I'm looking for what they are and an organic, preferably organic way to make them go away.
Iridescent green, but with reddish brown wings?
No, they're like an iridescent blue-green winged beetle.
Yeah, and what are their wing colors?
The whole
beetle is like this iridescent blue-green.
Even the wings?
From what we can tell. I mean, it seems to be the wings that give them their color when they're folded up sitting on a leaf.
And they're active right now, is now when you're seeing them?
Yeah.
And how long are they? How long are they?
Maybe 3/8 of an inch.
This, it could be, does it have like a little snout on the front of it? You haven't looked at it that closely, have you?
No, I haven't, actually. And what they do is they eat the inside of the leaves. They don't eat from the margins in. They turn it into lace.
Okay. It could very well be a little weevil that we call Polydrusis weevil. It doesn't have a common name. It's actually more of a forest pest. In fact, in the entomology department, Dr. Ken Raffa is our forest entomologist, has a graduate student working on this right now from a forestry perspective. But the adult weevils will feed on the foliage of lots of different plants. We see them in apples, we see them in strawberries, and we do see them in raspberries, and they are active right now. And the type of feeding is kind of typical of what I would expect from this insect. Even though it looks like there's an awful lot of foliage missing, it's probably not enough to affect the health of the plants.
That's good.
You see lots of holes chewed in the leaves, but generally a plant like a raspberry plant can lose maybe as much as a quarter of its foliage without really affecting its health. Plants over the years have had to learn to deal with the critters coming along and chewing on them, so they generally produce more leaves than they actually need anyway. But unless the plant is being totally stripped of foliage, I'd say that it's probably not a problem.
Well, that's good to know, because I'd prefer to do nothing than something, and if I have to do something, I prefer to it, for it to be organic. So
yeah.
That's a good thing to know.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you're going to do something, I mean, there's only, I suppose about the only thing organically you could ever do would be to cover them with some sort of a row cover, but
yeah, floating row covers, but floating row covers are a bit difficult to manage with a prickly plant like raspberry.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are. Thanks, Denise. Good luck. Cole in Kewaunee, it's your turn. Hi, Cole.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
How big can one strawberry get?
How big can one strawberry get?
We got... And what's the difference between a wild raspberry and a planted raspberry?
All right.
Those are two really good questions. The question about a strawberry, how big it can get.
I mean raspberry.
Oh, how big can a raspberry get? Well, the same answer applies. It depends on how big a raspberry will get depends on the cultivar of raspberry it is, or the variety it is, and where it's located on the plant. I've seen raspberries that are probably as big as the end of my thumb. So an inch or so long and 5/8 to 3/4 of an inch across.
Maybe it's the size of a shooting marble.
Yeah.
Shooter marble. Yeah, something like that. Okay.
And there was another question that has now just escaped me.
The difference between a wild and cultivated.
Wild and cultivated raspberries. The raspberries that we grow in our gardens are actually crosses between raspberries that were native in North America and raspberries that were native in Europe. And the raspberries that you would find in the wild are typically just raspberries that originated here, although there certainly have been some raspberries that people planted and then neglected, and they've grown and spread in a wild kind of setting. So that's the difference.
Do they taste any different?
They taste really about the same. There are some wild blackberries that grow off in the woods, and they don't adapt very well to being taken care of, and they tend to be a little less sweet, have more tartness to the flavor than the raspberries or blackberries that we grow in our gardens.
So there you have it, Cole. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks very much for calling. Always nice to. When school gets out, we get some great calls from our younger listeners. Appreciate that. John in River Falls, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I've got a question. An earlier caller had you identify the plum curculio, or however that's pronounced. Mm-hmm. We have sour cherry trees that apparently have that same, and you didn't discuss any of the control measures. I wonder if you could comment on that. And I just have a quick comment. I'm a hobbyist beekeeper, and a comment on this die-off of bees. I get a journal that the AI Root Company puts out called Bee Culture. And the latest one I just got, they're still pretty puzzled about what's causing the die-off, but they've looked over like the past 100 years, and they feel now like this syndrome has been present back from like the late 1800s until now. But they are puzzled as to you know, why it comes and goes, and you know what the cause is. But just to comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the plum curculio, are you seeing the damage on the cherries right now, or is it something that's going to
come? No, this is something that's been in the past. I really don't have it right now.
But, I mean, is it this time of the year, or is it a little later?
I believe it's a little later, but it's that clear liquid that he was talking about that comes out and kind of runs down the branch, and, you know, it's like solidifies, you know, like it's...
It comes out of the branch or it comes out of the fruit?
This is out of the branch.
It's a different creature altogether. He was talking about sap running out of the fruit.
Ah, I see.
What's coming out of the, possibly coming out of the tree branch is one of the wood borers. And there's two or three different kinds that can get into stone fruit trees. And that may be what's causing the problem there. And eventually, if they're allowed to continue, they will possibly kill the tree outright. It's a matter of about the only way of controlling them is to use an insecticide application a couple of times during the growing season, and there's a variety of products that are on the market that would do that.
Hmm. And we'll be back with our guests in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Talking fruit crops today on this edition of Garden Talk with my guest, Terrell Roper, professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, Dan Marr, professor in entomology, Patty McManus, professor in plant pathology at UW-Madison. So there we can talk diseases or insects or care of your trees or planting them, anything relating to fruit crops of any kind. I'm really surprised. I'm looking at my screen here and not seeing a question about strawberries, but maybe that's because they're... things are getting kind of over with. Curculio, though, is an insect that can create problems, and we should talk a little bit, Dan Marr, about control on curculio.
Yeah, plum curculio is a very common native insect problem that attacks most of our tree fruits here in the upper Midwest and indeed the entire eastern quarter of the country. Its natural fruits of host plants are the stone fruits, so it would be cherries and plums and things like that, but we'll get into all the cultivated stone fruits as well as apples. It breeds more in the stone fruits. It doesn't breed very well in apples because the apple tissue is too hard for the larvae to survive very well. So in apples, what we get is a very typical egg-laying scar, which is a very small crescent-shaped scar, a little under a quarter of an inch in size, which comes on very soon after flowering. This is a very early season insect problem. But it will still be there, and the scar will actually get larger as the fruit matures. And so at harvest time, you end up with this kind of a brown, corky, crescent-shaped scar on the surface of the fruit. But with apples, it's underneath that, it's perfectly okay. The fruit's fine. But with stone fruits, the larvae do survive, and they tunnel throughout the fruit and make the fruit just a real mess, and the fruit will fall off onto the ground and decompose. And it's an insect that has to be caught very early in the season. It's usually within about the first 2 to 4 weeks after the end of flowering. And there's a variety of insecticides that are effective against it. It's a very, very difficult insect to control by organic measures. In fact, some of the commercial organic orchards have a very difficult time controlling this insect and have an awful lot of losses because of it. But conventional insecticides do control it pretty reasonably. But again, it's a matter of making sure that the fruit are protected for about the first month after blossom.
Let's turn to Sandra in Racine now for a question. Hi, Sandra. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm in Racine, but my apple orchard is just on the other side of the Brule up near Nelma in that area.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, we had giant caterpillars that were defoliating the poplars, the roses, and everything. So I just dedicated a couple of days out there and put Vaseline around the trunk and grabbed them off and made up something on my own, a spray of mild soap and apple cider vinegar, and just worked at it. But now these little one-hole bugs and train track
invaders. Is there any way without all these chemicals? Because I just start wondering how healthy the apples are after so many sprayings.
Okay. Dan, comment?
The insect that you had that you dealt with was forest tent caterpillar, which is has periodic outbreaks up in the north woods throughout the upper tier of states and into Canada, and that's something that just occurs periodically, and we'll see that every 10, 15 years or so, those outbreaks, and they can be really ugly because they're great big hairy worms, and they occur by the millions of them, and they feed on a lot of different types of trees, and including fruit trees. I was a little unclear about the other insect problems that you...
Well, you know, I'm trying not to spray the apples, and it seems like if you use them quickly, either the bugs are so small, you don't know you're eating them, or, you know, you're going to make applesauce or whatever. I just wonder if, you know, with all the spraying, how healthy would the apples be in the end? It just bothers me, I guess.
Okay.
What I can tell you, everyone has their own opinion on this subject, as you can imagine. But what I can tell you is that the Environmental Protection Agency tests these products fairly thoroughly, and to assure that they protect not only the environment, their use protects not only the environment in as best a way possible, but also human health. Where people get into problems using these materials is if they do not follow labeled directions. If they use them too frequently, or if they use them in amounts that are higher than what are recommended on the label, or if they are used too close to harvest time. There's for every crop, there is something that's listed on the insecticide label or the pesticide label that's called the pre-harvest interval, and that is the period of time that you must wait after the product is sprayed before you can harvest and use that particular product. And that pre-harvest interval differs from product to product because different products break down at different rates in the environment. So, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency does its best to try to protect consumers who are using products. It would be a bit difficult to produce all the types of food that we like to eat in the United States and the quality of it without the use of pesticides of one form or another. So they are commonly used, but we try to make sure, the federal government tries to make sure that the usage patterns are as safe as possible.
And I also would add that hopefully on the program, and I've noticed that you all do this, is if there's an organic way or a non-chemical way to treat something effectively, that's usually the first thing out of your mouths.
Well, speaking for myself, there are some insect problems that can be controlled without the use of harsh pesticides. Unfortunately, there are some insects that cause problems that are very difficult to control.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much, Sandra, for calling. Appreciate it. Lori in La Crosse, we'll go to you now. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm calling about a plum tree that I have. And last year it got attacked by those spider webby things that get real thick, like the white cobweb kind of thing in the tree. And I was told to cut them out, which I did. And now this year I've got what somebody told me was called black knot, where I've got it bloomed beautifully and the tree was gorgeous. And 2 weeks later, all the leaves are turning black. They've got holes in them all over the place. And then there's these big black globs or knots on a few different branches in the tree. And I'm wondering, how do I treat this? Is it salvageable? Is it something it's only 3 years old. I don't want to cut it down, but I'm hoping to be able to repair it.
Yeah, the black knot is caused by a fungus. I'm not certain what's causing the holes in the leaves. That is probably something different than the black knot fungus. But if the black knot fungus is just on smaller branches and twigs, you can just simply cut them out. You should be making cuts well below the visible knot, so good 6 to 8 inches, because the fungus does grow inside the plant beyond where you actually see the knot. So you have to cut back a ways. Now, if you have them on large limbs or on the trunk, obviously, you know, if you don't want to destroy the tree, well, then, you know, you can't just cut. So you can try to surgically remove them. So you take like a chisel and try to knock them out that way. And when you're done, I wouldn't recommend the, you know, the paints or the wound treatments or anything like that. I would just try to do this in a dry spell, you know, when there's not going to be a lot of rain, because those black knots are covered with spores. And if you were to be doing this cutting and chiseling and so forth in the rain, well, then you would be likely to you know, create more infection. So by cutting them out, you'll reduce the inoculum, get them away from the site, you know, compost them or remove them from the site altogether. And if you have to chisel a black knot out of a trunk or a large limb, it will probably grow back. You know, you're not going to be able to get it all, but the tree should be able to put up its defenses and do okay.
Okay. Should I be applying some type of a fungicide to the whole tree or something then?
Well, normally we don't recommend a fungicide if black knot is the only problem. But if you're having these spots on the leaves, and I guess I'm not sure if there might be some bugs. Dan's sort of shaking his head over there. There are some fungal leaf spots also, and so maybe it would be worth spraying something. And Captan is a pretty good broad spectrum fungicide that you should be able to find in a garden store.
Captan.
C A P T-A-N, it's like a captain, except
okay.
It doesn't have an eye in it.
Eye in it, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
and that's like a fungicide to be sprayed on it then.
Correct, right. Make sure that any fungicide you do buy from a garden store, that it lists the tree or the fruit crop or whatever plant it is you want to spray. Make sure that it's on the label. That's very important. Keep it legal.
Okay. And if... Is there a way to maybe have, if I cut off a small branch or something, to take it someplace to have it, if it's not a fungus, this other, you know, the holes in it and the leaves turning black, is there a way to have that diagnosed someplace then?
You could send it into the UW. We have both a disease clinic and an insect clinic. And shall I give the address
here? Sure, why not?
The address would be 1630 Linden Drive. That's Linden Drive, and that's in Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. And you could put disease clinic or insect clinic, and the people talk to each other, and so if they can't figure it out, they send it to the other people.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And also, you don't want to send the plant where just the dead leaves are there, right?
That's,
you want to have some of the live
right.
ones.
The more the better. I know Brian in the clinic just gets delighted when he gets an entire tree to work with, but most people aren't willing to go to that extreme, but yeah, try to send a good-sized branch and your county extension office can help you with this too if that's convenient for you. They can help you with the packaging and sending.
Thanks, Lori. Judy in Grafton, we turn to you now. Hi, Judy. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with a peach tree. It's 3 years old, and it has yet to blossom.
That's pretty typical for peach trees. I assume that it's growing pretty vigorously.
Oh, yeah. It looks beautiful. It's tall. You know, it keeps growing. The leaves are great, but it just has not blossomed at all, and I thought by now it should.
Have you been fertilizing it?
No.
Good. Don't.
No, I don't fertilize my fruit trees.
I think this is just a case of being patient.
Okay.
Over time, it will set flower buds, and it'll flower, and it might well happen next year. It takes in that 3 to 5 year range before the peach trees are old enough to where they'll flower and set fruit.
Okay, thank you. And then I have one more question. My apple trees now have these little apples on, and I had heard something about putting a plastic bag on an apple to protect it. Is that something you recommend? To let it grow in that plastic bag.
Yes, this is a practice that's been used in Japan. I think probably started it many, many years ago, where they actually do it in commercial orchards where food prices are very, very high. But the young fruit are bagged right after, as soon as they get big enough that they can put a bag around them. There's been work at actually Brown County by UW Extension staff over the last few years in using just out of the grocery store zipper type bags, sandwich type bags, and encase those, encase the fruit in those, one fruit in each bag. And they usually have to be stapled because in a good wind, the zippers aren't usually good enough to hold. But just a staple on either side of the fruit and let the apple grow in that bag, and then bugs cannot attack it in there. And it they appear to grow and mature normally, color up well, good sugar content. Doesn't seem like it affects the growth of the fruit at all, and it does protect from insects.
I'll be darned. Okay, I'm going to try it on some of my apples and maybe not all.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, Judy. Yeah, that'd be a little bit intensive work there to get that done.
If it's a big tree, it could take quite a while.
Yep. Jim in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just would like to say right up front what a wonderful service you're providing to us who do grow fruit trees and,
thank you.
And have all these problems. Actually, I'm not in Madison. I'm on the interstate in beautiful Trempealeau County heading towards the Twin Cities. So I'd like to ask my question, if I could, and then I'm going to hang up and I want to listen on the radio.
Sure.
It involves squirrels. I've got two apple trees. I've got a beautiful Stanley plum tree and a Reliant peach. They all flower, fruit beautifully, and then the squirrels come. And I don't know how to control them. They of course, crawl up in the tree, eat what they want, knock fruit down, and just basically are terrorizing me. And yeah. How do I go about controlling those little critters? And I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
By the way, are you in town or out of town? With
passing. I myself am in Madison. Yes.
Okay, so it's right in the east side of Madison. Okay. All right. Well, Scott Craven, where are you when we need you? Oh, man, this is a very tough issue.
I can't think of a way to keep a squirrel out of a fruit tree. You could build a cage around it and make it critter tight, but that's about the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it would help to give them something that they like better. Walnuts, put them somewhere, lure them away from the fruit tree. But I don't think that will satisfy them either.
No. And there are some sprays that you can spray on your plants that animals don't like, but that is an expensive proposition for a tree. It can work for smaller things, but for trees, it's really. I mean, there's stuff that's hot pepper and
for some of those, you need to make sure that they're labeled for food crops.
You're right.
They work really well on ornamentals that we don't eat.
Right.
But we do eat the fruit from
these plants. So that's you're exactly right, and that's a poor idea on my part. I take it back. Dad, have you ever? I can tell. Let me just tell one story. Scott Craven's got a friend who trapped squirrels in his backyard in Madison, and as soon as he traps one, then another one comes. And I think he trapped something like 150 squirrels out of his backyard, and then I think gave up.
Did he release any in Jim's neighborhood? I was wondering.
I don't know what he did with them. Short of eliminating, the problem is even if you trap them and get them out of there, there's another one right there to take its place.
Yep.
It's an unfortunate thing. I wish we could help you on that one, Jim, but that's one time when I'm afraid you've stumped us. Because we all, probably all, I have that problem or I've had the problem. Now, this year with all the home remodeling, I've got no problems with squirrels and no problems with rabbits. My wife's flower garden looks great. We've got black-eyed Susans for the first time in I don't know how many years, just because there's guys wandering around with hammers pounding away on the side of our house.
And saws and drills.
And saws and drills and, yeah. And with squirrels, it's pretty tough.
They'll come back with a vengeance.
Yes, they will. Mel in Green Bay, hi to you.
Yeah, the question I have on those squirrels, they do taste a lot like chicken. Also, the question I have is on apple trees, is there any way a person can make them bear fruit every year? I'll take the answer off the air.
Yeah, that's a really common question. Apple trees do tend to biennial bear, so they'll have a big crop one year and almost no crop or no crop the following year. And the secret is, in the on years, to remove most of the fruit. You want fruit probably no closer than 6 inches apart on the branch. And you can do that by hand, and that's probably the best approach. Also, the insecticide 7 applied beginning about a week to 10 days after petal fall, and for about another 2 to 3 weeks will reduce the amount of fruit on the tree. And that can be put on at half the label strength for an insecticide application. But timing is absolutely critical. There's a window of opportunity from about 10 days to 3 weeks after petal fall.
Thanks for calling. Jane in Fitchburg, hi to you.
Hi. I have a bunch of elderberries. I'm not sure if you call them trees or shrubs or what, but I noticed about a week or two ago that there were some kind of growth on them that was like a bright gold, golden orange kind of a color growing along the stems where there was like soft green growth. And it seemed like there were just like too many to count. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what do I need to do with this? And so here I am on the phone. So I'm out here by my elderberries, and I can hardly find any of them anymore. They seem to have dissolved to nothing. There's just a couple of them that I can still find, and they're all shriveled up. So I'm not sure if I should have aggressively gone in and cut these things off, or whether it's something that I don't need to worry about.
Okay.
This might be a rust. And I'm afraid I don't know enough about elderberry to give you a very confident answer on this. But rust diseases will be bright orange. You know, depends. Rust, of course, has many, many different plants it goes to, different fungi that cause rust. But it'll be bright orange for a short period of time and plump and juicy because it's in its prime and it's releasing spores, and then does just kind of dry up and wither and go away. And chances are those spores have blown to another plant and are causing rust on that plant. But next year they'll come back to your elderberry if it's a rust. I mean, like I said, I'm rust or elderberry's not my specialty, but that's what it sounds like to me. I don't know if the others have an idea.
They looked kind of like tubers, and they were firm. They weren't soft, and I wouldn't call them soft and juicy, but I would say they were firm, and they were kind of long things that were growing right along, kind of encompassing the stem of the branch inside of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, next year, if you see those again, you might want to take a sample off and send them into the plant pathology clinic, or alternatively, get some digital photos of those and send them to the clinic, or provide them to your county extension office, or take a branch to your county extension office, and they could take some photos and send them to the appropriate place on campus for diagnosis.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Terrell and Dan and Patty, thank you so much. The time flew by. It was a lot of fun. Really appreciate you being here. We'll get you back.
Thanks, Ori.
Great.
We'll do it again. Terrell Roper, UW-Madison horticulturist, Dan Maher, entomologist at UW, and Patty McManus, plant pathologist. A real pleasure to have them along. And we will do this again. Coming up on Monday, we'll be talking about retirement with the author of What Color Is Your Parachute for Retirement? And then we'll take a look at Wisconsin's weather and climate with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. In the meantime, thanks a lot for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.